We're still talking Pittsburgh sports some way or somehow.
We are still talking Pittsburgh sports on Baldwin and the Berg. Doing a good job today. Having a nice time so far. And as we start, as always, we will start with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Bounce back win against Cincinnati Bengals 27-3 against a Bengals team.
Do you want to call them a football team?
Against a Bengals team that is, I think, worse than we could have even predicted. So I ask you guys to start off, are you impressed with the game plan that the Steelers put out there? Are you impressed with how the defense played after an early turnover by Deontay Johnson, a fumble that put the Bengals into scoring position pretty quickly? So do you think that this is a good win for the Steelers? Does this show anything that the Steelers are a good team, or is this just playing a bad Bengals team that just had no chance?
I'm impressed on the defensive side of the ball. Offense played better. They executed when they needed to, but the defense played very well. Again, I think each week they're developing and they're progressing from you know, last game against the 49ers to this game versus the Bengals. Mark Barron had a big game again, 11 total tackles. He had an interception in the end zone, took away from the Bengals from scoring. We saw Cam Hayward, 2.5 sacks. T.J. Watt, 1.5 sacks. These guys were all over the place. And they took out a quarterback that was making plays earlier in the year. As in Andy Dalton, he was, I think, second in passing yards coming into this week in the league, taking away his chances, taking away his time, pressuring him a lot, making him make tough decisions, and it worked out in the end, only giving up 3 points. That's a big win for the Steelers defensively.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, again, on the offensive side of the ball, majority of the plays that Rudolph was throwing were checkdowns. I was surprised that they didn't let him throw down the field a tad bit more. I mean, as we saw in college, the dude can throw the football.
He had 3 attempts farther than 10 yards.
Exactly.
It needs to be more.
I mean, of course, the receiving yard show, we got a decent bit of them, but, a bunch of it was just missed tackles by the Bengals, and we were able to just, rack up yards after the catch. It wasn't just Mason Rudolph throwing his guys open. The guys, everyone that caught the ball, James Conner, Jalen Samuels, and all those guys, they were just being able to make guys miss and just getting yards for them. But, yeah, I think, I don't know what Tomlin's game plan or the offensive coordinator's game plan is, but I feel like they should let Rudolph throw the ball downfield more. It'll open up the offense more and maybe just allow more things to happen.
And on the touchdown for Deontay Johnson, you got to realize the Bengals had a missed coverage there. I mean, they did a crossing route over the top, and the Bengals sort of got sucked in.
Juju took the defense with him going across the field for
Deontay Johnson.
It was basically a freebie at that point.
Yeah. Rudolph just had to hit him, and he did, so... I mean, that was a good throw on his part. So.
Now, the stats don't show it, but the Steelers' rushing attack was pretty solid the whole entire game. Connor only recorded 42 yards rushing, and Samuels 26. Both had 10 attempts, Samuels recording a touchdown. But they ran this Wildcat formation.
And something different.
It was something different. It was a new wrinkle in the offense that
I didn't know. This is the first time I've ran Wildcat in a couple years.
Well, when you have Ben under center, you... No reason to run Wildcat.
You're not going
to
run it. So I think it was very very smart. It was very well drawn up by Randy Fichtner to be able to come up with this. I'm not sure if this works against a team other than the Bengals, a team that's, I don't think this works against the Ravens with quicker linebackers, with guys on the outside with speed.
Smarter linebackers.
Too good defensively to run that against.
Right. So was the ground game good? Yeah, for the first time, just having to provide a new way to rush the ball.
And just controlling possession and time off the clock.
In the first bit of that game, how many plays were just jet sweeps, Wildcat? We just ran down the field just, sweeping the ball or, just running the ball. Either that or just going to the Wildcat formation. We just had a bunch more ways to get the ground game going.
Right, and the O-line really provided, stability?
Dependability,
probably the best word to use for.
Unlike the Bengals O-line, which is absolutely atrocious. I felt bad for Andy Dalton. He didn't even have time to throw that football. He was just were just cooked right by
him. They had to have Joe Mixon throwing big blocks out there.
Oh, my God. Who was that he crushed? Do we know?
Was that Minka?
Mike Hilton was coming on a corner blitz, inside, and absolutely got blown
he
up
got
by
He got blown up by Joe Mixon.
Now, one thing that I noticed in the game that has basically been a continuing factor, except later in the San Francisco game, Juju Smith-Schuster has not been a factor. He's not recorded a 100-yard game. He only had 3 catches for 15 yards. 15 yards against Cincinnati on Monday night, where usually your star players shine.
Now, I don't think that's a bad thing, because maybe, I don't think they are, but he might become a bigger factor later in the season. hopefully this week versus the Ravens, where like they might not be looking so much for Juju instead of, you know.
You think they're using it as more of a decoy?
I mean, not necessarily, but they're throwing the ball around more to different receivers than just Juju.
Than trying to force him the ball.
Yeah, like how they did with A.B., how Ben had to do that with A.B., force him the ball. I mean, for heaven's sake, I mean, they haven't even thrown – Rudolph hasn't even thrown to James Washington, his main target from college.
No.
And, I mean, finding Deontay Johnson and, I guess, Vance McDonald until he got hurt.
Nick Vinette had a pretty
– Yeah,
he had two big catches.
He had a couple nice catches.
I think Rudolph threw it a couple times right to Vinette, only where he could catch it. Rudolph made some nice throws to Nick Vinette.
He was very good being mobile and being able to escape the pocket.
Which
we didn't see in San Francisco.
So some Ben-style plays, you know, escaping from the pocket and escaping pressure.
Yeah, Deontay Johnson, 6 grabs for 77 and a touchdown. Pretty good game from him.
Mm-hmm. He looks solid.
He's looked pretty good early on as, you know, a rookie coming in from Toledo.
If he can get going, I mean, Juju, Deontay Johnson, and then hopefully they can get James Washington going. Those are going to be some three pretty good receivers.
Or maybe Stephon Diggs. Ooh.
Yeah, Stephon Diggs possibly wants out of Minnesota. I mean, more or less just tension between the wide receiver room and the quarterback.
Poor Kirk.
Well, not poor Kirk. Kirk can't get the wide receivers the ball. So poor wide receivers for not being able to make plays because Kirk Cousins is just playing dink and dack and not throwing the ball down the field.
He's literally playing how Mason Rudolph plays. Just, you know, maybe it'd take a deep shot once or twice a game and then just check downs.
Somewhat, and not being able to make big throws.
Not being able to make big throws.
I just hope they do let Mason Rudolph throw the ball downfield because we were watching Coward, and he was talking about the young quarterbacks in the league, mm-hmm. like Lamar Jackson and your Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watsons and other guys. Their coaches are letting them throw down the field, and they're making the plays. And Rudolph has been shown to make plays in college. Throwing downfield to guys like Deontay Johnson and the preseason to James Washington. They got to let him throw it downfield.
It's where Rudolph probably made his money in college. It's why he had so many passing yards. They were just like, hey, just throw the ball downfield. Just have James Washington, whoever your receivers are, just go catch the ball. Just throw them open.
You got to trust your receivers to get open.
It's more of the trust in the quarterback. Will he be able to deliver the ball there? I don't think the Steelers necessarily have the faith in Mason Rudolph to be able to throw deep, throw down the field. They know he can do it, but I don't think that they are confident enough in him at this point to be able to open up the whole playbook and be able to, you know, run a complete offense. Why do they have to be like that? Why does it have to be like that right now? I mean, you could say it's early on in the season, you want to ease him in, but with a team that was 0-3 coming into Monday night,
and now you have two tough teams coming.
Why are you easing Mason Rudolph into anything? If what you would want to do. Cincinnati would be the game where you would want to test it out. You would want to try it out, throwing the ball down the field. And if it doesn't work, well, you could do it in the third, fourth quarter when you already have a 20-point lead. What's the downfall to that?
They need to let Rudolph play this game because this game is the biggest game, I think, of their season.
If we win this game, we're in second.
If we win this game, we tie with the Ravens for a possible tie atop the division. If they don't, they fall to 1-4, which I don't think there's definitely no recovering from that.
And then it's just a lost season.
You got to let Rudolph make plays. You got to trust them throwing the ball down the field.
To a Ravens secondary, which has actually been quite shaky knowing how stout they usually are, they've been quite shaky this year. So, I mean, this would be a game like to test Rudolph's skills to see if he can throw the ball down the field.
Right. Now, one thing that I wonder, a lot of, you know, with many people doubting the Steelers and doubting, are they an actual team? Everybody's saying the Steelers are done. You know, the Steelers have no chance. They can't make the playoffs. Well, how about the fact that the teams that the Steelers lost to? Undefeated 4-0 New England. Seattle, who we saw last night.
They're a pretty good football team.
Big win at home against the Rams on Thursday Night Football. The undefeated San Francisco 49ers. Those teams have a combined one loss.
Some good competition right
there. One loss. So when you look at it, the Steelers have lost to the best teams so far this season with a second year quarterback just starting out.
And we were one play away from beating San Francisco too.
Yeah, we stuck with them pretty well.
And yeah, we kept it close with them. It was just New England where we just got blown out.
Yeah, New England was the tough game, which, you know.
Oh, no, it's New England.
And also with San Fran, I mean, you're getting Rudolph his first start, so he was a little – shaky going into that.
You can't not be nervous in a big game like that.
But again, 49ers are where they are because they're a good team. So the Steelers have played some very good competition. They finally took care of a team that they needed to take care of, and they took care of them at good measures, you know, and only allowing 3 points, I think, for the defense, like I said before, is a big step in the right direction. And the Ravens' offense, Lamar Jackson's playing very well to start this season. I mean, no one thought he was going to come in here and be producing producing like the way he has been, dominating 1,110 yards passing yards to start the season, 10 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions. He's been good for the Ravens so far, but coming off a loss against the Browns, a bit interesting. Again, the division is going to be interesting down to the wire.
It sure will be. And as Lamar Jackson was talking about the Steelers and Ravens rivalry, there were a couple of interesting things that he had to say. He said that the rivalry, he says, it's physical. Everyone after each other. I just can't wait to perform in it. And then describing the Steelers' atmosphere and game day environment, he said, they play that little song, which we all know is Renegade. They wave their little flags and stuff.
But he made the Pro Bowl.
With the little towels around it. It was pretty dope. I enjoyed it. Okay, Lamar Jackson, so you enjoy us playing our little song that gets the defense going in the fourth quarter. That he enjoys our little flags that were, yay, our flags. I don't know what little, this is not a soccer game, Lamar. I don't know what little flags you're looking at. But don't forget about our little towels waving. Oh, because we created the little towels. You know that, Lamar, that you guys like to copy in the playoffs. So you like our atmosphere? They're going to love eating you up coming up.
Unless he ends up cooking us, and then we're going to be quiet.
I think the way the defense has been playing, they'll keep him in check. They'll pressure him. They'll make him make bad decisions again.
I mean, our front seven's good enough to stop that rushing attack. We just have to trust that.
We have quicker linebackers.
We just have to trust that Marquise Brown doesn't burn any single one of our corners, and then we'll be good.
I think the big player to watch on defense is Devin Bush. Can his quickness, you know, stop Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram up the middle? And can he cover well defensively against their middle receivers and tight ends? Right. Big factor in this game, I think, for the
actually
Steelers.
No, actually, speaking of that, tight ends, covering the tight ends is crucial to the Ravens offense because that's Lamar's favorite target.
Another big factor in the game is who will be playing in the game. We'll take a look at this week's
Austin's
injury report.
Typical injury
every
report.
Week we look at the injury
Welcome
report.
To Austin's injury report.
That would be it. The fullback Roosevelt Nix, still with a knee injury. Very unlikely. There's basically not much of a chance that Roosevelt next plays on Sunday against the Ravens. Anthony Ciccolo has a foot injury. He also did not practice. Vance McDonald has a shoulder injury still for the second week in a row. Did not practice. Not that hopeful that he will play. And these are some interesting injuries, these last two. Juju Smith-Schuster has a toe, and James Conner's ankle injury that we saw later on in the game. They both have not practiced yet this week. So the Steelers could be without, obviously, their number one QB, Ben, their number one receiver, Juju, and their number one running back, Connor.
Oh, boy.
Now, will Connor
play? This is Austin's favorite thing, actually, because that means there's a chance that Jalen Samuels finally gets to show his stuff and see what he's made of.
Well, Jalen Samuels has already been able to show what he can do on Monday Night
Football. Well, he's going to get his full set of touches.
What do you mean he showed what he can do? Well, with his little Wildcats, like 5 yard run into the end zone with good blocking.
Well, I think just the way that he runs, people were able to see the.
He had the same amount of attempts as Connor and rushed for what, 20 less yards than him?
Well, he also had those running against the quarterback, those little pitches that counted as like passing yards.
He had 30 passing yards?
Mm-hmm. 31 to be exact.
But that's not him rushing.
No.
He's not proven yet.
No, he's. I didn't
Connor
say.
Connor is still your number one back.
I didn't say he was proven.
I said he's going to get more touches, or we're going to see what he can do with the full workload.
He would get more touches.
This is what he's going to do with the full workload.
Austin loves his Jalen Samuels.
I think Jalen Samuels has a really good running style. It's similar to Le'Veon Bell, and I think that his running style is one that works better with our blocking schemes. And I think that the way Samuels moves and the way he manipulates his movement and how he patiently waits behind the line of scrimmage, not like James Conner, who just starts running and doesn't really even, I don't even know if he knows where he's going.
On some Forrest Gump type beat.
He just starts running. I think it's the way that Samuels run that's more precise, and I think he's got more lateral quickness, and I think he can make people miss. And I don't think James Conner, even though we saw a couple plays that he could, can make many people miss.
And again, that was just the Bengals also aren't very good, and that was just bad tackling.
Also had, what, 83 receiving yards and 8 receptions and a touchdown. Yeah. When he ran for 15 yards after the reception to get that touchdown.
Right. Part of those on the Wildcat formations. So if Juju does not play, is there any faith, confidence in Deontay Johnson, James Washington, both the second-year receivers?
And then Dante Moncrief.
And then maybe the reemergence, the rebirth, coming back from the dead of Dante Moncrief?
You know what? I'm gonna say yeah. I believe I have faith in that core. I mean, yeah, Johnson's going to get covered, probably going to focus on him the most. But then I'm calling this, Dante Moncrief, he's going to have a big game. He's going to be like, this is my chance to shine. And I'm not going to miss this opportunity. He's going to catch a ball.
Okay, I think Juju and James Conner play, and Dante Moncrief again does not see the field. I think you need Juju out there. I think Juju needs that. I think Juju knows that. I don't think there's a doubt that in Juju's mind that he's going to play. I think just a toe injury, I think that he'll be able to he'll be okay. He'll be able to work off of it, see how he does in warm-ups. I don't think there will be much of an issue. I think he could still run it full force. Even if the injury is lingering or nagging him. And I just think that could Deontay Johnson and James Washington be enough? Well, we're not really seeing much of Washington at all. Rudolph's not throwing in the ball. But we've seen a lot of Johnson. And basically, Juju's been taken out of the games. The opposing defenses have taken him out of games, have been doubling them when they can. So I think that obviously Juju is playing a big factor and those guys are going to be able to get open. Do they need Juju? Yeah. But I'm more worried about the tight end position if they can't get Vance McDonald back, because Zach Gentry, we haven't seen any of him. Nick Vinette looked good, but how much can he really stretch the field? So I'm more worried about Vance McDonald's injuries if he can get back from the shoulder.
Yeah, going back to what you were saying about Juju and the double coverages, if you think about it, It was a similar situation last year. AB was getting the double coverages. Juju was seeing a lot more targets and receptions. Same thing's happening here with Deontay Johnson. But I think in this game against the Ravens, James Washington needs to be targeted way more than what he has been.
He wasn't even targeted at all.
He needs to be more. I mean, the connection between Rudolph and Washington is there. Obviously, we know it's there. We've seen it in college.
It just hasn't been there in the pros so far in the regular season.
It's been there in the preseason, so why they just need to get it going. They need to get it clicking, because you know James Washington will have his chances to get open. He needs to be a good route runner, get open, and Rudolph will hit him. I mean, if Juju's being double covered, he's gonna get open.
You would think so. Don't worry, though. That Steeler crowd with their little flags and their little towels are going to be going nuts. Trying to distract Lamar Jackson. Now we'll move over to the college part of the show, the college football portion. Nate, take it away.
Well, let's start with Pitt. Pitt plays at Duke this weekend on Saturday night, 8 p.m. Pitt, 3-2, 0-1 in the ACC. Duke, sort of a little bit different, 3-1.
No Daniel Jones.
He's out there killing it.
No Daniel Jones, but they do have a guy by the name of Quentin Harris. He leads their team in rushing, along obviously in passing. He has 303 rushing yards. He's passing for 842 yards, 10 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Kind of similar to Lamar Jackson's stats in the pros. Not passing-wise, but 10 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Pitt-wise, once again, another team that is feeding off of their defense. Same with the Steelers. Their defense has been one of the best in the league. They are tied second, I believe, in sacks with 24 in the FBS. Their players have been all over the field. And even in a game where they lost they won 17-14 against Delaware, their defense played very well. I know giving up 14 against a Delaware team that they should have probably not have given up Delaware that much to. But the defense was on the field a ton, and
let me go check. Is there a way to check time of possession? I'm assuming that Delaware probably had a decent bit of time of possession.
They had a lot of time of possession because Pitt started Nick Patty over Kenny Pickett because Kenny Pickett was dealing with some injuries, and he threw an interception. There was a fumble by Maurice French, and the defense was out there quite a bit. But we saw production once again. Jalen Twyman. He won the Outland Trophy for defensive lineman for the month of September. He has 6 sacks, 6.5 tackles for loss on that D-line. He's been an outstanding player for Pitt so far. I think a big surprise, you know, after guys like Kayshon Kemp and Rashad Weaver went down for Pitt. And then a guy to watch out for, freshman Habakkuk Baldonado, number 87 on that D-line, 3.5 sacks. He's tied for the lead as a freshman in sacks in the FBS. He's been another guy that has really stepped up, along with like guys like Deslin Alexander and others, and Patrick Jones on that D-line for Pitt. Their defense is might be one of the better ones in the ACC. And coming into this Duke game, they have to take care of Quentin Harris, who's a dual threat, you know, throwing and running the ball. And the running back situation for Duke, Deion Jackson, their top guy, only has 232 yards. But they have different guys to run the ball, like obviously between Harris and Jackson. Throwing-wise, I mean, they target their tight end. He has 22 receptions, Noah Gray, for 172 yards. So they'll have to neutralize him over the middle. But this game will be interesting, a night game on the ACC Network. It'll be fun to watch. Pitt, Duke. Duke might have the upper hand. They come off a big win, 45-10 over Virginia Tech, which was a bit of a surprise. Virginia Tech's usually a better team than what they've been showing this year. And Duke has just sort of took care of them very handily. It'll be a big game if Pitt can go into that, into Duke and take that one.
And Duke's program has been steadily, I wouldn't say on the rise, but they've definitely been improved the last few seasons.
They've had some good NFL caliber guys, Daniel Jones. So
I mean, big man. Jones. And what did you guys think of Nick Patty's performance? How do you think he played? Because I thought he didn't play terrible. I mean, his first career.
He was
first career start.
I think he was very average. I don't think the playbook was open really much for him. I don't think there was much trust or confidence in Nick Patty. You saw it at times, but it wasn't the same type of freedom, ability that Kenny Pickett's given, Kenny Pickett can show for the team. Now, one thing of note, Trey Tipson has knee surgery. He'll be out the remainder of the season, so.
But he usually
hasn't been healthy anyway, but. He's out, another wide receiver gone for Pitt.
You don't really have to worry about that because they have, you know, the best duo in all of college football right now. Chasier Mack, Maurice French have 72 receptions, which is number one in all of FBS.
And I'm pretty sure that French is, I think, fourth in yards per catch with 7.8. That was going into the Delaware game. I'm pretty sure he's up there. So, again, one of the better receivers in the game.
I think Pitt has a lot of pieces that if they put together, they can win big-time games. Delaware didn't see much of, you know, a promising game. A lot of people will be like, oh, you're going in and beat a top 15 team in UCF, and then you come and play this game.
But if you're a real Pitt, if you're a Pitt fan, you expected this.
You expect it kind of.
I expected it.
I mean, they only beat Ohio 20-10, but Delaware I don't think is merely on the same level as them because Ohio is expected to win the MAC. But Delaware, you know, gave them a tough game. Again, they controlled a lot of time possession.
And then I think he was a freshman, don't quote me on it. Nolan Henderson, I believe he was their freshman quarterbacker. I believe they brought him in. He didn't look terrible. I mean,
no, he made some good throws.
He made some good throws. I mean, again, the team didn't look, I mean, they weren't god awful. They were like a semi decent football team, but again, Pitt eventually ended up getting the win over them. I mean, Taysier Mack, another big game, 5 receptions, 124 yards, and we had a 100-yard rusher.
Finally, for the first time.
For the first time, for it feels forever, and Todd Sibley.
Finally, we ran the ball like the Olsen.
The beginning part of that game, I was confused because they were doing, you know, jet sweeps with Fleet Carter and Shockey Zakawi that were getting like 5 yards. And then finally, in the fourth quarter, whenever they were trailing, they decided to, let's run the ball like we – should running up the middle, and they were getting yards with Todd Sibley finally. So, and they were at without their top two backs and AJ Davis and Vincent Davis. But Todd Sibley is another good back that the trio of running backs they have, and he finally got it going. He'll be a guy to watch in this game. So, moving on to another big game, big team, number 12th ranked Penn State. They take on Purdue. Penn State's 4-0, Purdue's 1-3. I don't think there's much of a game here. I thought there would have been more of a game last week versus Maryland for Penn State, but they just
Maryland didn't. They didn't score, correct? They got shut out.
59-0. Penn State, utter domination. It's unreal. This Penn State team didn't think they were they had the level of talent that they've had in the years past.
No, losing over the years, the Barkleys, the Miles Sanders, Trace the McSorleys, the just you name it, the play, name numerous players that they've had.
Both. It's the next man up, and James Franklin does a great job at that.
The guys that they've had on both sides of the ball, and for Sean Clifford to come in and, you know, I wouldn't say it really doesn't miss a beat for Penn State this year. Being able to lead that offense kind of like McSorley did, somewhat in a different way, with McSorley being more mobile, but
both were able to sling the ball.
Both are able to be able to run the offense, run it in their own way, and it's been effective for Penn State.
Clifford balled out this game too. I mean, he went 26 for 31, 298 yards, 3 touchdowns, and overall in the season, Sean Clifford is second in rushing on Penn State's team, 167 yards. Their rushing attack, their running backs did not top 50 yards, any of them. And they have 4 top guys that can really run the ball, and like guys like Journey Brown and Devin Ford, Noah Kane, Ricky Slade, all younger guys. But I think they need to rely more on them. And there will be games later on in the season when they take on their Ohio States and their Michigans.
That they're going to need a ground game.
They're going to need a ground game. They have shown, you know, flashes of it in some games, but not really relying on it. In a Maryland game that you win 59-0, I mean... Do I think it's a problem? Maybe. I think they need to get it going because when they face teams like that. But this Purdue game, Penn State's 28.5-point favorites over Purdue, the Boilermakers, not much of a game. Their defense, I think, once again, will have a strong game, potentially another shutout. Guys like Micah Parsons and Yetur Gross-Matos has been – and LeBron, like guys like local talents, Lamont Wade, been playing well for Penn State. Again, another game they probably should just dominate the competition in the Big Ten. And then looking at West Virginia, they're 3-1, but they welcome in number 11th ranked Texas into Morgantown this
week. Big game
week.
Down in Morgantown for WVU.
Shout out my boy Liam and all them. Get the boys. Shout out Liam, Sabo, and all those boys. Get the boys hyped.
Gonna have a real test.
Yeah, this game, I don't think West Virginia's gonna have a chance. I think it's gonna be similar to Penn State, similar to Texas. They'll dominate over West Virginia. Austin Kendall only thrown for 871 yards so far. And also their rushing game has not been much at all so far this season. Kennedy McCoy, I mean, only 150 yards for this West Virginia offense.
That's it.
Not much. I mean, they've beaten teams like Kansas, and they did beat NC State, which I'll say was a good win. But they struggled a little bit versus James Madison and Ben DiNucci to start the season. But again, I don't see much of a chance against a Texas team that's playing very well. They're 3-1 coming into this game, going into Morgantown.
And their only loss was to a solid LSU team, which I think probably has a good chance of beating Bama this year whenever they play them. I like this team.
Yeah, that offense run by Joe Burrow has been absolutely dynamic.
I agree. And then the defense has just been good enough for LSU. I don't know if it's been stout as it has been in recent years, but it's been pretty good as well.
This is the best LSU team in a number of years, and they have a real chance of making the playoffs and going far.
There's a lot of teams that have a good chance to be top four.
There's always those one or two underdog teams, and then the two set teams are always normally Alabama, Clemson, you know, those guys, and then there's always two teams end up sneaking, like, you know, Notre Dame, like the Notre Dames, and then the Georgias of last year.
Notre Dame is tough for them. I mean, another team that I think locally has a lot of praise and gets a lot of fans from the Pittsburgh area. Shout out to our boy Tommy Allen up there in Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
They're 3-1 without a division conference championship game with already one loss. I'm not sure if they're going to get in there with the caliber of teams that are all, you know, have the capability to make it and be a top four contender.
No, probably not. So now we'll move on to our good old segment. As we get to the top of the hour, the irrelevant fact of the day.
Let's go.
All right, so we're pulling one out from 100 years ago. This is this is pretty interesting. So
did you know that James Conner made the Pro Bowl?
No, that is not the fact, but that did happen. So in 1919, the Cleveland Indians pitcher, Ray Caldwell. Okay. He recorded a complete game against the Philadelphia A's. How about that? So there's a couple things to look at that right now. The Philadelphia A's, or the A's are in Oakland, the Phillies are in Philly. So, you know, that's one thing that, oh, you say, oh, that's kind of cool, right? Now, he completed the perfect game. This is pretty interesting. In the ninth inning, right? He completed the game in the ninth inning. In the middle of the ninth inning, he was struck by lightning. He was struck by lightning and completed the game. He completed his perfect game after being struck by lightning in the middle of the ninth inning.
But did no one go out to be like, hey, bro, you good?
Oh, he probably was good, and he decided, I'm going to finish this. I'm going to do what I started. I'm going to create my own lightning.
My own
lightning with my perfect game.
But nowadays, if someone's touched by a flea out in the mound, they're taken out of the game.
Oh, yeah. So any type of pain. And,
on some race series type.
Yeah, any type of pain inflicted on anybody. So 100 years ago, 1919, Ray Caldwell's perfect game after being struck by lightning.
Such a different world 100 years ago.
There's your irrelevant fact of the day.
If we have to say it, I say we say it in unison. It sounds beautiful.
No, continue.
Let's not do that. Now we'll move on to the irrelevant team of the the Pirates managerial search is on. Oh, I wish they were as relevant as they were in 2013 to 2015, but in this point in time, they're really not. But they made themselves a little bit more relevant.
At least we beat those Cubbies.
After firing their manager, Clint Hurdle. We saw that now in the news the last few days, actually just yesterday. Race Series and Tom Prince announced that they have no chance of returning to the Major League staff, no matter who the manager is.
Good.
Very good. Now, any other position, any other coaches are eligible to come back if the new manager wishes they do, like maybe Justin Message, the assistant pitching coach, or the bench Tom Prince is the bench coach, so he can't come back. But any of the new hitting coaches, Eckstein or Jacob Cruz, they could come back.
They should keep them. I don't care why they've won it.
I think they've been good.
I mean, I know it depends on who they bring in, but they've been good this year. I think the person that comes in needs to realize that their hitting's finally doing something compared to their pitching. Keep them.
Yeah, the hitting's a little better, but obviously the pitching has been pretty terrible. So that's why Ray Searich is out. Now, other names in baseball that are out, Joe Maddon in Chicago. Good chance that he goes to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
To go waste Mike Trout's career.
Who just fired Brad Ausmus after one season. Maddon is familiar with the Angels organization after being the bench coach there before bouncing around the league in Tampa Bay and Chicago. So there's a likelihood that Maddon goes there. He likes it out there in sunny California. So there's a really good possibility that the Pirates could be left with a numerous amount of guys. There could be Derek Shelton. You could look at Tom Prince was, as many believe, to be an internal option. You could look at Jeff Banister, who's an option after being the manager of the Texas Rangers coming back this season, is very familiar with the Pirates organization. Or you could look at a guy maybe like Mickey Callaway, who was just fired from the Mets. Now, my personal opinion, I think Mickey Callaway would make an absolutely great pitching coach. I think the success that he had in Cleveland, basically with the likes of Trevor Bauer, showing how good that he can be, the likes of Corey Kluber, Carrasco, look at Clevenger. These guys have been phenomenal for Cleveland. Now, Callaway hasn't been there in a couple of years, but when they came up to the big leagues, their start was with Mickey Callaway, and he's basically the one that instilled a lot in them. And that when they went on their World Series run, Mickey Callaway was the pitching coach, leading the charge for that staff and that incredible bullpen.
He knows how to develop his players and put the trust in their hands during games.
He knows pitching, and I think that being in a lower market, not being in New York with the lights on him, everything being on him, with all the criticism falling on Mickey Callaway, I think that he would be able to, I would say, star again in a smaller city with working with the Pirates pitchers. I think, I don't know how similar the Mets and the Indians pitchers really are. I think that the philosophy that Callaway brings would work best for the Pirates. I think that, you know, striking guys out, recording outs any way you can, is the way to go in baseball, especially with the increased number of strikeouts in the game. The ball is just not put in play much. Either you're going to strike out, you're going to hit a home run, or you're going to walk. It's just what's going to happen. So, do I think the Callaway would be a good option here? Yes, I think it would have to be the pitching coach variety. Also, the bench coach job is up for grabs. Could be something you're looking at. So, what do you guys think that could be the new Pirates manager? Any potential options that you see that could fit?
I still stick young. We mentioned in our baseball breakdown show, I do like the ideas of bringing in former players such as Carlos Beltran or Raul Ibanez. I do like that idea. So, I think I'd throw it up between those two, maybe. That would be kind of my preferred person, to get a young guy that can relate, that just came out of the league, you know, 5 years ago, get someone like that in there.
Well, two others that are relative to the Pirates organization in their own way, John Wehner.
John Wehner was mentioned, I saw that. And
Jason Kendall both threw their hats into the ring to be able to say, you know, we think that we can do this job. We would like the opportunity to be able to present ourselves and say, give our pitch as to why we think that we could be the one to get this Pirates team back to the playoffs. Would Wehner be a good option? Well, his name's been floating around for a while now as an option to be able to coach in the Pirates organization. I think that he would be a good option being, you know, from the city. I think he would be able to relate to the fans, be able to relate to the team, and be able to provide a positive message. And I think he would work with the – I think he's not a young guy, but he's not someone that's has an older philosophy like Clint Hurdle. I think that he would really be able to relate to the younger guys.
He's like a good mix of both.
I think he would be able to relate to the younger guys, probably the best in the whole organization.
I think it would be – he wouldn't be a bad choice either because he's been – like you said, he's been around. And I think the one thing about him, he's up in the commentary booth. He's breaking down the games, and he sees what the Pirates are doing wrong. And I think he'd be a good guy to go in there and fix it. Instead of a guy like Mickey Callaway, I know he's going to maybe – a potential person for the pitching coach, but he hasn't seen what's been going on for the Pirates. John Wehner has. He knows what's going on in the organization.
Right. Possibility could be that with Neil Huntington's familiarity with the Cleveland Indians, but working in there for a large part of his career before coming to Pittsburgh, he could like Callaway. He could be familiar with Mickey Callaway. So it could be a possibility that that relationship is already built there, like the relationship is built with guys like Derek Shelton when they were both in Cleveland.
Now, one thing I do want to touch on, somewhat Pirate-related, is the MLB postseason. And some of the guys that were former Pirates that are playing well in the postseason right now.
Perfect example,
Mr. Charlie Morton for his Tampa Bay Rays. No earned runs in five innings pitched. They take out the Oakland Athletics in their wild card game. He was dominant against an Oakland team that can hit. He was absolutely dominant. He was showing his stuff. He's going to be a big-time part in the series versus the Astros for a Tampa team that, Austin, you think could potentially maybe upset them.
I think, yeah, I like what Tampa does. I think they're a team that could win a couple games. I predicted that they would beat Oakland in the wild card game. I like what they have. I like their pitching. Now, one thing that's really interesting is there will be a former Pirate that starts Game 1, Game 2, Game 3, Tyler Glasnow, Gerrit Cole, Charlie Morton. So
how about that?
And that just is part of the list of former Pirates in the playoffs that includes, or that was in the playoffs when the playoffs began, Daniel Hudson, Gerrit Cole, Tyler Glasnow, Morton, Austin Meadows, September Player of the Month in the American League, David Fries, Jay Happ, Jordan Lyles, Russell Martin,
Tyler Lyons,
Mark Melancon, Francisco Cervelli.
Yep.
If you could create a whole roster of guys, of former Pirates that are in the playoffs,
and they would be a solid team to play.
That would be a solid team if they only had the right coaching, like they've found in their new organizations. There would be a little bit more success to be found with these teams. So, what do I necessarily think could happen with the managerial search? Hard to tell now. There isn't really much that you can do with teams still playing in the playoffs and not being able to interview their candidates until afterwards. I think that Shelton is from Minnesota is a likely possibility. I think anybody you can get from the Astros staff would be a good idea. Their bench coach has been floated out there a lot as a possibility for different types of organizations. I think you should take a look at John Wehner, take a look at Jason Kendall. I wouldn't make Kendall my manager. I would favor Wehner over Kendall just because of what Wehner knows about this team and this franchise. And that also kind of worries me, startles me to the point where, you know, John Wehner already knows all the players. How much of a message is he going to really be able to bring across? Because it's not really that much of a new message because he's already familiar with everything that's going on.
That's true. You bring in a new guy that's going to have a whole different message and bring in a new, you know, style and hopefully change the atmosphere for a team where, I guess, John Wehner, you know, has felt the negativity of this team and might not be able to change a whole lot within this franchise. So, like I said, I like the younger candidates. I know it's a stretch. I know you maybe want a little bit more experience, but I wouldn't mind, like I mentioned, your Carlos Beltrans and other guys to that style to bring in someone, you know, a new vibe for this team.
Yeah, the only thing I worry about with those guys is they have no, they really have no experience like whatsoever now.
So, but my say is why not? Because this team, where's this team at right now? Nowhere.
No.
You got to build up from somewhere. Why not start fresh with a guy that's, you know, maybe just starting out? Yeah, maybe things don't work a year or two in. Maybe it doesn't work at all. But you give it a shot. You give what they, you know,
what the people want.
Rejuvenize this organization and this clubhouse, because where are they? They are stuck. There's young guys on this team that are sooner rather than later going to be like, get me out of here. If they don't get a guy maybe that can relate, that can, you know, spark this franchise.
Right, and one thing that I look at is the bullpen. I have no idea where this bullpen goes from here with Keone Kella and everything that happened with him this season. Vasquez won't be back. I think that's clear to say at this point. Vasquez will never pitch for this team again.
Can we bring back Jason Grilly?
Jason Grilly, come back from your couch.
Give him that grilled cheese. Joel Hanrahan.
He's probably like 42 right now, but bring him back.
Bring back the hammer, Joel Hanrahan.
Hey, Rodney's still pitching at 42. We saw what happened to him in the playoffs.
Yeah, he got absolutely cooked.
Kyle Crick is around. Don't forget two names. Chad Kuhl, Edgar Santana coming back.
Ooh.
Could be sneaky to one in the rotation, one in the bullpen, or maybe even both in the bullpen. Could help out this Pirates team because we're going to need a new closer. Pirates are going to need a new closer.
It's going to be Crick. I have a feeling it's going to be Crick.
I think it's going to be Chad Kuhl. If you throw him out there, his stuff plays up in the bullpen, I think he'd be really good in that role. Will it happen? Probably not. It'll probably be Keone Kella. But there's much to look at, much to go on. Not many answers for the Pirates at this point, but lots of questions left to be answered. Now we will move on to our
I'm sorry
segment, where we basically either portray an organization that feels that they need to apologize to the fans or to somebody in their organization, or we have our own apology for somebody for doubting them or being wrong about them in any sort of way. So we'll start over with Golvash and his I'm sorry.
Well, I want to say I'm sorry to Matt Murray, who got absolutely pelted with shots. He saw 40 shots. We got no offense for him. And now everyone's saying the Penguin season's done after one game.
One game, just like the Steelers season was done after one game, right?
People are saying...
We'll touch on the Penguins in,
we'll talk
in a few
We'll touch
moments.
On the Penguins, but Matt Murray, he played outstanding, but still. He lit up three, and then the Penguins got zero offense for him. It was an absolute shame. Waste of a solid goaltending performance.
My I'm sorry goes out to the Pirates fans for waiting so long for new management. Clint Hurdle stuck around a few years too long. Who cares about his extension signed in 2017? It's about time he's gone. Ray Sears, you too. I don't care if you can work with veterans, but you can't develop our young guys. So I'm sorry, Pirates fans. Here comes our new management.
I'm sorry, Pirates fans, but hey, now they're gone and we get something fresh. My I'm sorry goes out to poor old James Washington. The guy comes into his second season. All right, I'm going to get some chemistry with Ben. You know, we're gonna do good this season. We're going to work everything out. I'm going to be a big factor in this offense. Oh, now my college quarterback's playing with me, Mason Rudolph. Oh, this is going to be great. We're going to have a great connection. We're going to go deep all the time.
I'm going to make the Pro Bowl.
We're going to connect on lots of different plays, and it's going to be phenomenal. James Washington has been non-existent. Zero catches Monday Night Football. I don't even know if he was targeted. I don't think he was targeted. My I'm sorry goes out to James Washington for thinking that Mason Rudolph would throw him the ball, but the poor guy, his good old friend from college, has not thrown it to him once.
Has turned into a snake.
It is just absolutely...
He's snaking James Washington. Free James Washington.
It's a mess for James Washington. James Washington, I'm sorry you're not getting the ball. I would hope that you will tell your buddy Mason Rudolph, let's get that Oklahoma State connection going back up again and let the wins rack up. So now we'll move on to the aforementioned Pittsburgh Penguins. First loss to the Buffalo Sabres 3-1 last night.
Take it away, Penny.
Take it away, Penguins insider Nathaniel.
Well, Pens lose 3-1 to a Buffalo Sabres team that maybe they should have not lost to or should have not have gotten dominated as they did. A lot of people are freaking out right now. But I guess that's just the state of Pittsburgh right now, that everybody's got to freak out about one game and, you know, a poor performance. But it's one.
They do realize that there's 82 games.
Yeah, it's one out of 82. Like, come on now.
We lost the home opener last year. We made the playoffs.
Yeah, the Sabres, I mentioned this, you know, last night.
They're a good young team.
They're a good young team. They might not be a good, you know, overall team, but they have good talent, young talent, guys that can
and nice pieces
that can play. They got outshot 41-29. Like you mentioned, Murray played an outstanding game, 38 saves. You know, that's a tough task to go up and face 41 shots and, you know, make 38 saves out of those. He did get pelted. The defense needs to say I'm sorry to him because they didn't play their best games. You know, I think the Sabres, again, young team, were just much quicker than...
Who knows? Maybe the Sabres put all the pieces together, and this is, like, the peak of their team.
I mean, last year, they started out hot.
They were the best team in the league at some point. They had the best wins until Tampa Bay decided to, you know, turn it up and then get swept by Columbus.
I mean, they have a good team. They have Carter Hutton in net.
He's always been...
I think he'll be a key piece to them this year. But I think the Penguins just got beat by Buffalo's speed. Buffalo has a lot of young speed.
And that just shows what's JR doing? What's Rutherford doing? Rutherford's just...
There's a lot of key pieces to the team that... We're getting a visitor right now. But back to the pieces that they did bring in, I thought there was three guys that really stood out to me last night in the game. Malkin, but then two pieces they brought in, Alex Galchenyuk and Brandon Tanev, played a very good game compared to, you know, the top line with Crosby and Gensel. I mean, they weren't seen much at all in the game.
It was more second line getting more minutes.
The one big thing, though, for the Penguins, they went 1-for-5 on the power play. I just don't think that can happen. Finally, they did score. Gino had a beautiful goal, walked in, you know, let it rip. That was their lone goal in the game. But they need to score more on the power play. I think it was a sloppy effort, but you can't over-exaggerate about one loss to start the season. They go in, they play Columbus on Saturday. Columbus, now if you lose to Columbus, maybe you can start scratching your head and saying, all right, what's going on here?
Again, Columbus isn't a bad team either.
Yeah, again, don't get too worried. Now, if you do start 0-2, then you're like, okay, like you can get a little worried about things. But I think the Penguins, you know, there's a little couple pieces. I mean, you lose Kessel, you bring in guys like Dominic Cahoon and Tanev and Galchenyuk.
You switch pieces. There's gonna be time to gel. There has to be time to gel and mesh together.
We see it a lot from the Penguins. I mean, for heaven's sake, in 2015, 2016, the year they won the Cup, they were not good.
Well, they did go through a coaching change, but as we know, one game, the sky is not falling. Okay, they'll be fine. 82 games.
The sky is falling because you know why? Dominic Simone is in the lineup. That is why we lost. And you heard it here first.
Dominic Simone should not be in the lineup. I think we're all in agreement on that. But
Nathan Legere, throw him in.
Yeah.
Sky is not falling. Let Galchenyuk, let Brandon Tanev, let Dominic, let these guys get their chemistry with Crosby, with Malkin. Let them be able to learn Sullivan's game plans the way that he likes to go about it. Let Recky coach him up. They'll be fine, okay?
Recky talking.
Okay, well, they're going to be okay. The Penguins are going to be fine. Let them play out. It's going to be okay. So we just want to mention really quickly, we had a visitor. So that a little break that we had there in the middle.
I guess he can say, I'm sorry to us for interrupting our show.
I guess he could say that. It's someone who came in here, took a USB drive, patted me on the shoulder, said thank you very much, and decided to just leave.
You can Title IX that man.
All right.
That's okay.
Back to the Penguins. Columbus on Saturday night. They need to turn things around, play better, not let up 41 shots. Murray, sure. I think, will have another good game. He's the biggest key piece. But
you can finish.
Thoughts is the defense is going to struggle this year. I think not moving Jack Johnson. I know his contract is absurd, and teams aren't going to take his contract. I think guys like Gudbranson, he's a bigger guy, but he's slow. Him and Johnson, they finally got rid of Mata, which I think was another slow guy on the defense. But I think that's going to be, you know, their weak point, and letting up 41 shots relies heavily on the defenseman, you know, maybe getting in front of shots, maybe not letting players for Buffalo walk in, as in Rasmus Dahlin scored a very nice goal. I mean, Connor Sherry was untouched twice. when he scored his two goals.
But I thought Connor Sheary wasn't supposed to be any good, so we decided to dump him for money to sign Jack Johnson and lots of other guys, right?
Hey, I think the offense is fine. Connor Sheary, I don't know. He would have been okay. Yeah.
Connor Sheary would be like what Dominic Simone is right now.
I mean, on a Buffalo offense is up and coming, he's a good, decent piece that has the playoff and championship experience, you know, that helps, you know, mesh that offense together with guys like Jack Eichel, Casey Mittelstadt, guys like those caliber players.
Brian Hart, all those guys.
Yeah, and like we mentioned, I mean, the Buffalo Sabres have a good team.
Like, dude, those are all solid players. And then they picked up Johansson in the offseason.
What do you guys think of Tristan Jarry being the backup to Casey DeSmith, DeSmith being placed on waivers and being able to clear and go back down to Wilkes-Barre with his cap number?
Yeah, it was a money move. Tristan Jarry, they've talked about, had a lot of potential. He was one of their better prospects sitting behind Murray, but never had the time to come up. I don't think he'll ever be a number one. I mean, maybe.
But he could. He has some trade value with the potential that he has to be a number one. I mean, again, like you said, you don't know if he can be a number one. Their trade value is there in case we ever want to ship him off.
He's not going to get the time that, you know, other guys will see. I mean, it's not going to be a Murray Fleury situation where they're playing like a Luongo,
Corey Schneider, like,
yeah, where
guys.
They're playing, you know, every other game, but he might be. I mean, we saw a guy like Thomas Greiss come into Pittsburgh where he was a backup for his whole career and then move on to New York and end up being
one of the better goalies.
Yeah,
on the team.
Kind of a stud for a year or
two.
He had a
.92 save percentage.
He was pretty good in Long Island for a year or two. Tristan Jarry might have that potential and promise, but I'm not sure what the playing time he'll get. But we'll see about that. Like I said, Pittsburgh, the Penguins take on Columbus at PPG Paints on Saturday night. So we'll see how that turns out. No worry, no reason to panic whatsoever for this team. They have a lot of guys. Malkin, I think he played a really good game. He's a big part of this offense. You know, I mean,
he always has been.
He's got to be a big part of this offense because a lot of people were doubting him coming into this year. I mean, how is he going to play? How is he going to, you know, bounce back from, you know, a pretty bad year last year. He had 4 shots on goal, which led their offense yesterday. I mean, he played with a chip on his shoulder, I think, because, I mean, last year he just struggled in the playoffs and in the season. You know, I think he wants to be that top guy. Now, with Kessel gone, I think he has a little bit more freedom, and he's not, you know, being hounded, I guess, by Kessel's, you know, talent ability where he needs to let Kessel get his touches of the puck. Malkin can sort of be free now without Kessel hindering him, but we'll see how that turns out, you know, coming into this month. This month will be a big, you know, eye-opening stretch for the Penguins to see how they start off, and we'll see how they do.
So when we move on to our predictions, we'll go right to the Penguins versus Columbus on Saturday. Game is at home. Who wins and why?
I have the Penguins. I say they win 4-2. I think they adjust defensively from their mistakes against Buffalo in their opener. Malkin has another goal. I say Sid gets on the score sheet as well. And then a couple other guys chip in, maybe McCann or Galchenyuk. You see Galchenyuk with his first Penguin goal. They win 4-2.
I'm going to agree with Nate, but I think it's going to be more. I think it's going to be a 3-2 game. I think it's going to be tight throughout because, you know, Columbus still has that solid defense, and then I don't think Korpisalo is a terrible goaltender either. I mean, just going to be their forwards. I say it's going to be a 2-2 game, and then it's going to go into overtime, and then that's where we're really going to dominate because, again, we have better skill players in the end of the day. I mean, you throw Sid, like if you throw Sid and Malkin and Letang out there, I mean, they're probably the best three players, and Gensel probably, if they ever throw him out there. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's going to be better than whoever Columbus throws out there, and we're going to end up putting the puck in the back of the net and winning in overtime.
I go 3-2 Pens. I think Crosby scores. I think Galchenyuk scores. I think Brandon Tanev, a guy that a lot of Penguins fans were kind of upset that they signed, the money that they did, and especially the length that they did. I think he gets on the board pretty early on in the game, and I think that the Penguins win. Moving on, who will be, in your opinion, the next Pirates manager? It's really early on. Who we think now might be different than who we think in a couple weeks. At this point in time, who will the guy be?
I go Carlos Beltran. He was second in odds behind Raul Banya like a week ago. and one report. I like the youth movement, like I've mentioned plenty of times. I think he's your next Pittsburgh Pirates manager.
I think it's either going to be, like you guys were saying, either someone from, or either like a Kendall or a Tommy Wayne or like one of those guys. I think one of those guys, I think they'll be able to hold down the fort for the team.
I go Derek Shelton, Minnesota's bench coach, familiarity with Neil Huntington. Brings in a guy that he knows and guys that he likes and doesn't really create much of a possibility for failure, maybe, in Huntington's mind. So I think that's the route that at this point that they would take. Last prediction. Will Bechtold's Baldwin plans fall through this weekend?
No. Bechtold's plans never fall through this weekend. Never
they,
do.
They will, because Bechtold is known for his plans to fall through with that certain someone.
Bechtold also thinks his plans are going to fall through, but we're not exactly sure at this moment. So we will move on to the last point in our show, the shout-outs segment. Shout-outs. Who wants to start with their shout-outs? Usually we give one shout-out or as many shout-outs as we want to one professional or one to our family.
Professional, I shout-out Evgeny Malkin for his only goal that the Penguins score. I think a little bit of a resurgence season for him coming back from the dead after a bad season last year. And shout-out to Mom and Dad. They'll be listening to it later. Shout-out to them.
Shout-out Josh Selzer, a friend of mine who's up here. Ain't nothing wrong with him. He's just a great dude. I mean,
we love Josh.
He was supposed to be on the show today, but he had a big paper to write, so he couldn't join us.
He had to write a
Josh,
paper.
We all love you. We'll catch you in the dorm later.
He'll be on in next week. We'll have a little segment.
We'll try to get Josh on. My shout outs, I have a bunch. One, my professional shout out goes to Randy Fichtner. Good creativeness with the Steelers offense. I like what he did with the Wildcat formation. Don't think he can work in future weeks, but I like what he did. Also, I want to shout out my family. I want to shout out Megan, Damian. I know you guys are listening. I want to shout out my aunts, my uncles, my dad, and especially Erin up in Boston, who's taking time off of her radio show to be able to listen to me. Really appreciate it. And thank all of you for listening. So as we close out, we would like to thank all of you for listening, and we want to just remind Lamar Jackson and all those guys in Baltimore, with the Steeler fans waving their little flags, having those little towels going crazy.
It's a Steelers third down.
It's going to be a Steeler Sunday, wild Steeler Sunday coming up. Lamar Jackson enjoys the atmosphere. Remember, it's lit over there. It's dope. Lamar Jackson, he can't wait to be playing in Pittsburgh against the Steelers. Remember,
wait till Mason Rudolph goes for 400 yards.
If the Steelers win, the Steelers will be tied. We'll be tied with Baltimore in the division with Cleveland playing on Monday night. This is going to be the little song that Lamar Jackson likes the Steelers to play. Can't wait to get it going. Steelers, Ravens, coming up this weekend. For Baldwin and the Bird, this is how we close it out. I am Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Golvash.
Thank you, as always, for listening. Have a great day. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Peace.